no decorations, just you and me. Would it be Christmas then? On the first Christmas.
Hello, and welcome back to Cricket Tonight. That was The Cricket on the Hearth, The First Christmas. Welcome back, Mr. PG.
Hi, how are you? It's great to be back for a Christmas special and a great song, Cricket on the Hearth.
That is the Christmas theme song, as far as I'm concerned. it's Golf Christian here, and it's great to be back as well.
What's a hearth, just out of curiosity?
It doesn't matter. It's about the spirit of the song, all right?
Exactly, it doesn't matter. And to just clear that up, it's not a cricket like the game of cricket we're talking about. It's an actual cricket, the insect. So,
It still fits in.
It's still a cricket. Like, the definition of cricket is pretty wide-ranging.
Definitely. It's a great sport and it's a great insect.
And crickets are happening at tonight, right? You hear them at night. But anyway, go on.
Let's move on. There you go. So, you know, we can't spend the whole podcast talking about the cricket on the hearth, but a few things have happened. We've been away for a while. What have you done, PG?
Look, I've just been out and about. And I know we were planning on coming back, but it's sometimes... stuff happens. Like, you have best intentions of winning a series, then your best player goes out, they get suspended. Another player goes in, they hits a triple 100, and you end up losing the entire thing. And that's a bit like cricket tonight. We've had all these big plans coming in, and it just hasn't panned out as expected.
I think we had a good run. It's like, the best example I can think of is the Beatles. I mean, they had a good run, but after a while, you know, they had to break up once the egos started clashing. I think that's what's happened to us as well.
Are we breaking up? Is this the talk over a podcast?
Hiatus. How about that?
We need a break.
But we're looking forward to this Christmas special. There's lots to talk about. Yeah,
definitely. There's a lot has happened obviously since we've last had a podcast. I guess we can start as we always do with the Indian cricket team. We can discuss the Indian Sri Lanka series for
the second
time in a row. I haven't been following the series as closely as I probably have followed other series before, just because it's been boring my brains out to see Sri Lanka playing against India yet again. And honestly, it's been pretty much the same result. Three test matches, one was rained out. India won comprehensively, and Sri Lanka were able to draw another one. So India win that 1-0.
I mean, looking into the first test match, though, Sri Lanka was in a really strong position at one point in time. Then India came in. Like, from the position they were in to go into an almost winning position was actually... Yeah. A sign of a champion team.
I think India were almost bored in that first test. And I think Sri Lanka shocked them a little bit. India had very low expectations of the Sri Lankan cricket team, as they should. And Sri Lanka came in with a little bit of energy. And, you know, they performed well as the underdog. But India came back as true champions do. And that being said, I was a little bit disappointed by the way India played this series. I mean, leading up to a big series against South Africa... For one, you know, I think they should have used it as a warm-up for that series. They should have won at least the last two tests. Second of all, the selectors, I don't think, did a great job selecting the right players for this tour. I'll give you one example. Bumrah was told by the Indian selectors, you know, to rest for the Ranji Trophy. So he hasn't played a four-day match in about a year. They don't play him in this series against Sri Lanka, which is pretty much a warm-up series, let's be honest. And then they select him for the South African tour. So I don't really know... if that's putting their players in the best position to succeed. They bring back Ishan Sharma. Again, I don't understand that. I've made my views very clear on him throughout this podcast series. What do you think, Ami? Do you agree with me?
No, I would definitely agree. A lot of the selections were questionable. The Bumrah one is a good example. I think if you're going to put him in the South Africa series, then you're putting a guy who hasn't played any test cricket in a very long time. On top of that, you're going to South Africa without any practice games. What are you going to do? You're going to pick him off just a, you know, gut instinct without any preparation. I think that's a bit of a risky move. So then maybe he's probably more just for being around the team at this stage. What else do you think?
I think India also have a habit of debuting players in the wrong format. I remember a few years ago with Rahane, they actually played him in one-day cricket for about maybe a year, almost 2 years before they gave him a debut in test cricket. And a similar thing with Iyer. I hope with Shreyas Iyer, they give him a shot in the test team before long, because I think he's much stronger of a 4 or 5 day player than a 1 day player.
Yeah, look, I do agree the selection's been a bit haphazard, and Bumrah, for me, is still a questionable selection in South Africa. I think he's got the assets to do it, but I do agree with you. If he was going to play in South Africa, he should have been playing Ranji or in the third test at least. Ishan Sharma, he's a questionable selection, but you do look at his record in the last year, and he's leading wicket taker in Ranji Trophy. His average is very, very good. He's performing, but having said that, I still see him as India use this selection series, this entire test series as test and test and learn. Like, they tested out the openers. Shikhar Dhawan played. Murali Vijay sat out of the first test. Shikhar Dhawan sat out of the second test. Bowling-wise, they mixed it up. Shami rested in a game or two. Some of the spin bowlers were changed around. They dropped, you know, they were thinking about Hardik Pandya. He rested out this entire series. Lots of different things happening. But for me, what was really good to see in the series is they did go for more seam-friendly tracks in this test match. And the first test was demonstrative of that. India did collapse in there, and that's not a good sign for South Africa. But I do like the fact that the Indian team is looking forward to the South African series, and they are trying out different things. Now, whether they'll be successful, and we can get into that series and how their preparation is later on, but it is a good start that the Indian team is looking towards that overseas tours that are coming out.
Virat Kohli had an amazing series, and he's bumped his average now up above 50. I think he's one of the few players in the world or in the history of cricket that has a one-day and a test average above 50. So that's an amazing record. So it's good to know that he's in great form going into the next series. But were there any highlights at all for Sri Lanka?
Yeah, look, Lakmal bowled amazingly well. He was brilliant. Like, his first spell in the first test, and Sri Lanka found a really, really solid player in Lakmal. They had a couple of good batsmen who scored some runs. Angela Matthews again.
Yeah.
He was injured for a lot of it, but he performed quite well. And the fact that they drew that third test, right, you look at Sri Lankan series. The Sri Lankan team lost 3-0 to India just about three months ago. Since then, they defeated Pakistan. And they've drawn two test matches against India. And that, to me, is a massive sign and progress in the Sri Lankan cricket team. And I've been quite impressed by Sri Lanka. I think they're on par with the likes of Pakistan, Bangladesh, and maybe even England, based on the current work that's happening.
Yeah, there were some. I think Dhananjaya was a big player in the last test match. He's the guy that came in and replaced Rangana Herat. And he came in as a batsman and kind of scored those runs to keep him in the game. So there were some highlights from Sri Lanka, but I don't know. With Sri Lanka, there's just, you know, they come in from a series where they could have actually looked to maybe go a little bit harder. But again, the bowling wasn't that spectacular. Like, Virat Kohli wasn't solid against them. From India's point of view, you know, Murali Vijay coming back, that was great to see. He came back and he dominated.
He cemented his spot as the number one opener in the Indian cricket team. Yeah, I probably agree as
well. I've had my views on Murali Vijay, but he really batted really well. And he made a really strong case for why we need him, especially in overseas tours, which will be coming up soon.
It was also good to see the return of Rohit Sharma. He's been in and out of the test team for about 10 years now. And he's one of those players that Indian selectors love. And despite his failures in the past, they keep giving him opportunities. But I've always believed that he's a better 4 or 5 day cricketer than a 1 day cricketer. And he's proven himself in the 1 day format. So I think he's one player that I actually support, despite the fact that he's had failures in the past. So moving to South Africa, I hope he really shores up that number 5 and number 6 position.
Yeah, well, he averages over 50 in the last year or two. So Rohit Sharma is clearly the best backup batsman in India. So it's a question mark where you go, the top 6 batsmen, you're adding Hardik Pandya. It's really Rohit Sharma is the one who often misses out. And right now, the good thing about the Indian cricket team is the batting lineup's really settled. Everyone scored run. Pujara scored runs, with the exception of Rahane. Rahane was the only exception, I'm saying. And the interesting thing is, you know, he has got an amazing away record, but he's also the vice-captain. And the big question mark will be, going into South Africa, he's currently out of form, a failure in the first test. Would you look at a Rohit Sharma potentially playing if he isn't going to play in the team as a batsman?
Rohit Sharma would be a good backup at the very least, but we can talk a little bit more about the squad in our discussion about the South African series. But the bowlers for India didn't have a great series. They're a little bit lackluster. Ishant Sharma, who I was criticizing a lot a few minutes ago, had a solid series. And he has done well in Ranji. The reason he was probably the highest wicket taker is because Bumrah didn't play. But anyway.
Played for 2 years.
No, but yeah, it's, you know, India had a solid series. You can tell they weren't, you know, they didn't really have their heart in it. They're probably looking ahead to the next series already, which was a little bit disappointing. I mean, India should have won 2-0. If not 3-0, even though I know the first test was washed out. But look, hopefully they've got the preparation they need for the next series.
Yeah, we can definitely touch on more of the Indian-South African tour, which we've probably been waiting for it seems like forever now. We'll talk more about that later. But on the other side of things, closer to home,
well, what about the ODI series?
Right? Oh, so yeah, good,
that was
good,
a tale of two halves. The first ODI where India was rolled out for just over 100, only making 60, and everyone else bundled out.
Yeah.
And the second game, you got Rohit Sharma, his third double 100. And right now, Rohit Sharma is on track to becoming one of the all-time great ODI openers in history.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's where he is right now. He's just I know we're talking about his batting position, but for me, he's definitely an opener in ODI cricket, and he's proven that again.
Without a doubt. I sometimes do think that he could play well down the order, but honestly, with a record with three triple 100s and opening the batting, it's hard to put anywhere else. It's got such a solid record there, and he's just played so well. He sets the tempo. Interesting was that he scored his second 135 balls or something, and his first one at 100 plus balls. So once he gets set in, and by set in I mean the first 100, then the next 100 can just come in a matter of no time. I wouldn't be surprised to see him making a triple century someday. Yeah. Oh, it could happen.
It was also good to see Ayer play well in a game or two that he got a shot. I think he's going to be a mainstay in the Indian squad over the next few years. It's very difficult when India only really play five batsmen in the Test series. That doesn't really leave many spots open for new players coming in. But he's definitely one to look for moving forward.
Yeah, look, I've been backing him for a long period of time. And you look at Karun Nair's failures in Ranji Trophy this entire season, where he hasn't surpassed, I think, 50 runs more than once. And I'd say Ayer is right up there as being that next backup.
He has been for a while, yeah.
And he has been for a while, so it'll be good to see. I know the South African series, they'll Roy Chalmers there, and that makes sense to me. But going forward into the subsequent years, I think Ayer is a name to watch across all formats for India.
Yeah, there's also Washington Sundar came in. He played quite well in the...
Great name, Washington.
Very American.
But then the surname Sundar, which means beautiful. So it's,
Washington's beautiful, I guess.
It is.
But yeah, it's good to see him. He's got a pretty good shorter format record. I mean, I just follow him a bit in the IPL sometimes, and he's quite effective. He's got that kind of dual kind of role. A bit of bowls a little bit, bats quite well down the order. It's good to see Dinesh Karthik back, Gov. What do you feel about that?
No comment. I'm going to talk about... going back to the Test series quickly, because we didn't cover this point. They batted Ashwin at number 6 a lot of the time, and he didn't score any runs this series, and that's a little bit worrying moving forward. And you can tell we're all itching to talk about our South African series. It's very... what we didn't see this series is strong performances by the lower order for India, and India really need to sort of address that issue.
Yeah, again, we'll talk more about it in detail coming up. Was there any other points you want to talk about in this series?
No, let's move on. We're looking forward to non-Sri Lankan cricket, right?
Yeah, exactly.
One quick one. Who's your tip for the decider? India's playing Sri Lanka right tonight, actually, for the ODI decider. Right. Who are you going with?
I think Rohit Sharma will score a triple century. I think India will win it fair and square.
I think it might be a small spirit effort from Sri Lanka. We've seen more fight from them this series than we have in the past in the Sri Lankan series, where they just laid down and just let themselves run over. I do think they'll put up a fight, but I think just the brute force of Rohit Sharma and Virat Kohli.
Well, Virat Kohli's not. He's resting. He's married.
But they're sort of younger selections as well. Yeah, looking to prove themselves.
Yeah. I think we should have got an invite to that wedding, to be honest.
Helped cover it. It's good to see that. Well, look, I'm going to go India as well win it. I think what's been good to see, though, is Rana hasn't been picked. And I'm a big fan of this, where it's been quite clear that Rana, the view to Rana is he's an opener and that's it. And right now he's not the best opener. And that to me is a reasonable position to be in. I'm glad they haven't tried to slot him into 3, 4, or 5 because he will not be successful in that role in ODI cricket.
No, I definitely agree. He's I think he still maintains his spot as a backup opener just because he's had some very good form recently. But I think, Dhawan and Shikhar Dhawan and Rohit Sharma are just far superior at this stage.
Yeah. And as you guys were saying before, Dhoni had a good series. It looks like for a couple of years there, Dhoni had sort of cooled off a little bit and was starting to talk about his retirement, when he was going to time that. But he's been in good form recently, and maybe he's got a bit of a second wind.
Yeah. Look, I don't think recently. Like, for me, it's when we try to compare him to his old standards, we think he's not in form. But relative to the rest of the team, the rest of the world, he's still one of the leading wicketkeeper batsmen in the world in ODI and limited overs cricket. And that first game clearly showed how important Dhoni was, where he saved India from what could have been the worst recorded total in history of 35. They were 26 for 7, and Dhoni brought the score up to over 100. So I think he's got an important role to play in ODI cricket. T20 is another question entirely, but I'm glad to see him. And I saw this video on YouTube, which was Hardik Pandya doing a 100-meter sprint against Dhoni, and Dhoni won that. And you go, someone who is that old beating Hardik Pandya is someone who's immensely fit, and you see that out on the field and how great he is.
And the thing is as well, there's no other good young wicketkeeper in Indian cricket right now that I'd feel confident in replacing Dhoni with. It used to be Pant. Pant has sort of dropped off the map a little bit. I mean, he's still playing in Ranji Trophy and some List A games, but he had an amazing start to his first-class career. And I think we might have hyped him up a little bit too early. I still have confidence that he'll bounce back, but you know, he really needs to go back to domestic cricket and prove himself. And other guys like Ridhiman Saha is more of a test player. You got Sanju Samson, who I don't have much confidence in. Again, he was hyped up too much too quickly. So I think Dhoni has his position on lock, at least for another year or two. But we'll see.
Yeah, definitely. Good to have Dhoni in cricket anyway. It's always better for the game. So closer to home, we can talk about the great Ashes series, which we've been following closely. Don't know how to start this. I guess England right now are looking like they'll probably be losing the Ashes.
Yeah.
Not the favourites. So, you know, Steve Smith, of course, has just been dominant throughout the entire series. It's good to see some surprise selections that have performed out really well for Australia. We've got another opening partner for David Warner, who's Bancroft, who's actually played quite well in a few games. Sean Marsh has played well in games. Mitchell Marsh just blasted
Tim Payne coming in out of the blue. Like, yep, all the selecting have been... Everyone criticised these selections, yep. But they've been on spot. All the selectors, the selections that they've made, including Mitchell Marsh,
yep,
have performed.
Yeah, they haven't got anything wrong so far.
The other big stat is Steve Smith, yesterday after his... Well, he's still batting at the moment. Yep. After his innings, he's now gone ahead into the second highest average of all time, moving ahead of Adam Voges.
So, oh, yeah. That's a big achievement there. That is a big achievement, yeah.
It's still hilarious to get him voted there. You go, why is he there? But yeah. Anyway.
I can't remember the last time there was a close Ashes series in Australia. It always seemed like it was very one-sided either way.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Yeah, it's been disappointing. I'll be honest. Like, I was really looking forward to the series being very, very close. And you go in there and Australia's dominated from the get-go. There was bits and pieces and sort of half hopes that England might do something in Adelaide. Hasn't happened. Mm. And even if you inserted Stokes, I don't think it would make too much of a difference.
I think there was a pretty big void in the batting and bowling lineup, and I think adding Stokes would have added a punch to the batting and bowling lineup. Yeah, no pun intended.
But Stokes is actually dominating in New Zealand right now.
He's got 82, didn't he?
He's got 82. He's doing well, so when he comes back, it might be good for them. But I guess it's been a bit surprising. Like, England have had good performances from some players who we didn't even... Honestly, I've never heard of them before because I don't follow English cricket as much. Yeah. Vince Milan
did well. Made 100. Sorry,
played well in this game. Like, they have Alistair Cook hasn't come to life. Joe Root has been, you know, Steve Smith has played way better than Joe Root, and they're meant to be the comparison players. From bowling standpoint, Jimmy Anderson had a game where he looked like he was dominant. An inning, should I say, where he took a lot of wickets and he brought them back into the game. But overall, again, this innings, nothing's coming out of him. They are probably missing Stokes, but from a bowling point of view, I don't know how much Stokes adds.
We should spend a bit of time talking about Steve Smith. I mean,
he's definitely
by far the best test player in the world right now, and his average can be compared to anybody historically, and it tops anybody. Do you think he's going to be able to continue this run of form? It's not even a run of form anymore. It's like he's been keeping it up for about 5 years. It's amazing.
Four years plus, he's had a crazy average, and it'll be interesting to see in about 3 or 4 years' time if someone works him out. But the reality is everyone keeps saying they're trying to work him out, and he's just got this amazing ability and technique where he moves around, has an unorthodox technique, but just gets the run and can find the gap so amazingly well and just barely gets out. So he's performed around the world. To me, I agree. He is clearly the best batsman in the world at the moment in terms of test cricket. I mean, limited overs is a different question. But on the whole, you look at how leadership changes a player, and Stephen Smith has performed really well. Virat Kohli, again, has someone who's lifted his game. Yeah. And you look at someone like Joe Root, and he's actually gone backwards as a leader. So for me, the conversation now in terms of the best batsman was sort of like a four-prong race with Williamson, Root, Kohli, and Smith. And Williamson's a bit unfortunate because he doesn't get to play a lot of cricket in New Zealand.
Yeah.
But for me, it's really a two-horse race, which is Virat Kohli and Stephen Smith. And Joe Root is not fit to be called in that top two batsmen anymore.
A lot of people don't like the comparison between, you know, Steve Smith and other great players of the past, like Tendulkar and Brian Lara, and same thing with Kohli. Everyone says it's too premature, and it probably is. But the question always is, how many more years of performing at this level do they have to perform at before we can start comparing them against those icons of the game? And if Steve Smith keeps his record up, for another couple of years, there's not many players that can compete with his record.
Yeah, there's sort of two ways you can look at that, because of course times are always different now, and the way cricket is played is completely different to how it was played before. Test match cricket, even when we were watching it, is different. So, the thing about when Tendulkar debuted, that's a completely different ballgame altogether. Mm. So there's that comparison that normally goes about. But yeah, look, Steve Smith is I can just repeat what you guys said. He's the best batsman in the world right now in terms of test cricket. Leadership has completely come to him naturally. And it's good that he's come this way, because we remember watching him, I think, in his first series.
Years ago, and you go, why is he in the team? He came in as a spin bowler.
Yeah, he was
Shane Warne, the next Shane Warne.
The next Shane Warne, yeah, that's right. Blonde hair and everything. But yeah, now look at him. He's one of the best batsmen that Australia had in probably, forever.
I can't remember that, because his name is SPD Smith, and there used to be a running joke when he first started. It was Spud Smith. He had a U into it, and now you go, all those people out there, myself included, would be going, What were you thinking at that time? Because he'll go down in history as one of the best.
Yeah. I cannot wait for that Australia-India series coming up next year. The best two batsmen in the world going head-to-head. But let's not get too far ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, were there any other comments you guys want to bring the Ashes?
Look, my prediction is that England will... They might actually end up drawing the Perth test just because it's going to rain for the next day and a half. And I hope they draw that test just so there's something going in there. But I'd say Australia would be... England will be lucky not to lose any worse than 3-0.
Yes, I totally agree with that. Australia have been far and away the better team this series, and I don't see them losing a single test.
Yeah, same. I mean, they had such a good performance in this test match where they got like, 400 or something in the first innings.
Yeah.
And then then Australia are 530 for like 4 wickets down with Mitchell Marsh coming in and scoring 150. Like, you know, it's ridiculous. They still have batting depth and they're just going to bat England to the ground, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if anything, there's some hope in a draw in this match because of rain, but there's no competition.
Yeah.
In
the series. One player I have been impressed with is Overton. And he's got a broken rib. He's playing through the pain. And even then, he's putting in 100% intensity in the field. Yeah. He's taking wickets. He's trying to hit the ball. So for me, he just shows a lot of fight and character. And he might not be the best player. He only balls 135 kilometres. But he's finding a way to succeed. Mm-hmm. And you look at a lot of the English players on paper, they seem to be decent players. Yeah. But in practice, they seem to be really struggling. And then you look at the disciplinary issues. So not only the Ben Stokes incident, you got Johnny Bairstow headbutting Bancroft. It turned into a joke. But who was it? Was it Wokes? No, not Wokes. Dunkett pouring a drink over Jimmy Anderson's head. Just you go, you know, what are they doing? What are they doing here? This is one of the most important series for their careers. Mm-hmm. Cook's playing his 150th test. And this is the lead-up that you have for your team and for your country. And it's a bit of a disgrace. And the English cricket team should... Hey, they should be forfeiting the rest of the series if they could, because they're performing very, very poorly. They should be forfeiting.
Yeah, after a series like this, especially if they lose 5-0, they need to really reassess who their captain and coach should be. This is the biggest series in their calendar, and it's been quite obvious from the outside looking in that they haven't come with the right mindset. Adding Stokes in would have been a bit of a different story, but I don't think it would have been the difference between a 5-0 and a... You know, any other results, to be honest. So, you know, it's been a very good series for Australia.
Yeah, definitely. So, I guess the other piece of news, which wasn't exactly with cricket on the field, but it changes the way cricket is going to be played. It changes a lot of what we, the way we follow cricket, the matches, tours overseas, is the Futures Tour Program, the FTP by the ICC. So this changes the way cricket's going
to
be now.
Finally, it's taken a few years to get to this point. It's been talked about for years.
It has, and first impressions for me are not that favourable, to be honest, because I am a cricket fan, I guess, from maybe an older generation who prefers test cricket. But I do understand the struggles to market cricket, because most of the money comes from T20 cricket, whereas, you know, the most prestigious game is test cricket. So over the next 4 years, we'll be seeing more T20 cricket, we'll be seeing more ODI cricket.
Maybe T10 cricket?
We might see some T10 cricket, who knows, we might see some super over cricket.
Just
do one over and see how it goes. But yeah, so things are going to be changing a lot right now. We're going to have India, South Africa, England and Australia are going to be playing much more test cricket against each other in a sort of tour that's already been scheduled. So India's playing quite a bit overseas and quite a bit at home as well. They play the most matches out of everybody, followed by West Indies. What are your guys' initial thoughts on the FTP?
Like from my perspective, I'm going to go, like, some of the positives, because there it is looking at this. It's taken a long time to get to this position. And you think about where the ICC were and the FTP, and basically countries just pick each other, and you end up with scenarios like Sri Lanka playing India
twice,
50 times in a calendar year. That's going to change now. And it's really good to see progress from the ICC going, we're now setting up a test league, setting up an ODI league, and setting up a T20 type league. And part of that test league is Ireland's now part of the test team. You've got Afghanistan's in there. And Bangladesh, for example, have been big improvers. They're going to have a record number of tests for them in the next 4 years. So there's been really positive signs coming through. And you're right, test cricket isn't monetized as much, but this at least locks in a set amount of test cricket. Ideally, you'd like every single country playing home and away over a period of 4 years. That's not going to happen, which is unfortunate.
Yeah.
For me, the biggest challenge was in ODI cricket, where I went, it's a lot easier to do that. And I'm very surprised they've gone with this. You have to play 8 or 10 of the other countries over a 2-3 year period. I would have preferred you play every single country, either home or away, and you just alternate that in every 2 year cycle. And given that it's a capped at maximum of 3 ODIs, which I think is really a good move, right? We're no longer going to have these 7-match ODI series or 6-match ODI series. 3 matches, hardcore games, if you lose that, you lose ranking points, and it all contributes towards a World Cup qualification. That's a really good move. And the fact that more and more countries are being included. So lots of positives to look at. The downsides are what you mentioned at the start, which is India, South Africa, England and Australia are going to play a lot of cricket between each other. And it is almost going, there's a glorified big three or big four type approach where they're going to play against each other. That's being done. The other one is, you know, Pakistan and India, that ties. Yeah. There's a lot of politics involved and a lot of issues involved. But, you know, that's still a question mark over this FTP. How is that going to fit into it? But on the whole, I think it's progressive. And I'm quite happy with this right now. It could have definitely been improved, but it's a good step in the right direction to adding more relevancy to different activity. And the other interesting one is, which I don't necessarily disagree with, which is about how the IPL has now got a clear window in place, and that's been set in stone, which should help address some of the issues with some of the other countries. It does set a dangerous precedent. What I'm less impressed about is more about, I think India was looking to have a window in September and retain that slot, and that to me I'm not sold on. But on the whole, look, positive signs. I'll wait to see how it looks like, but I quite like the fact that this FTP has gone ahead.
Yeah, look, as you said, there are positives and negatives. It's easy to sort of just fall into the fact that, yes, you know, it's all negative. But look, at least they're looking to change things up. Mm. That's always a good sign. I've always said that, what's the point on these useless T20 and ODI series? There's no use to them. It's just a random series after a test match, which is good for me if you're following some players, trying to get them up. But like as by themselves, I see them as quite useless. It's good to see Afghanistan and Ireland getting into cricket officially. So it's not just like you'll get a test match sometime. It's actually been scheduled. So that's good. It's good to get other teams playing. But yeah, as I said, I'm just quite down because the fact that we're going to see less T20, we're going to see less test match cricket. So, you know, we might see two series a year now, which is quite unfortunate.
And it's two test series, a lot of two test series that will come in against the smaller nations, and the bigger ones will be four or five or three tests. But the other one, interesting thing is, you know, four-day test cricket, because it's not necessarily linked to the FTP. Yep. But South Africa's trialling this at the moment against Zimbabwe, and it's a four-day test. ICC have said, we're not supporting four-day tests, but we're happy to trial it for a period of time. And I'm not necessarily opposed to... Yeah, I'm not necessarily opposed to a lot of this, right? It's kind of going... For me, four-day test cricket, if they can keep the number of openers going, the number of overs going, that team makes sense. So they're looking at, I think, 98 overs per day. So it's an extra 15-minute sessions added onto every single session across the day. And that goes, hey, 400 overs, you might get a good result. And for me, day-night test cricket is the future as well. So I actually see test cricket moving entirely to day-night test cricket. And you look at the crowds in the Ashes series, for example, Adelaide test match. Outside of a few games during holiday periods, for me, it makes sense to do it. You got the peak time period. And the game dynamic changes so much, so many more considerations. Twilight batting, when do you take the new ball? When do you push someone in? So many more permutations come in. And that, to me, is the saviour of test cricket. It's coming in and adapting and evolving. And things change over time. Like, you know, the reality is test cricket from years ago, people don't turn up to that right now. And we need to evolve with the times. And giving the crowd what they want, for me, makes sense. And day-night test cricket, assuming we get the ball right in all the countries and everything, should be something to look at in the future. And four-day test cricket as well, if we can get the number of overs sorted out and start doing it, is also the future as well.
Yeah. Part of the FTP that really interests me is the Test World Cup, if you want to call it that, or the Test Championship. How do you guys think that's going to work out? Because it's going to be a very drawn-out World Cup. it's going to span over a couple of years.
Well, I mean, they've been talking about Test World Cup or Test Championship for a very, very long time. They've been trying to get some way to bring more to Test than just the two teams going against each other, or rankings. So I think this is a step in the right direction. I don't know exactly how it's going to play out. I don't think even the ICC right now know how it's going to exactly play out. I think they're still sort of looking into that, how to make it engaging.
It'll be convoluted points again. And that goes back to the whole, not everyone's playing each other home and away. It's just this different season. You get this massive ratio that'll come in. But, you know, it's something to work through. At least the ODI one will be a bit more normal. You'll have a clear champion at the end of it. Test cricket,
ODI and T20s, I think, are pretty safe. But yeah, I don't exactly enjoy watching T20 internationals. What do you guys think about that? I prefer, actually, to be honest, franchise T20 even more.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I see it as a bit of a kickoff event. Exactly. You start off the summer, like your home summer. India's now got a home summer as well, which is a good move as well. As a T20, maybe you end one on a T20, but it shouldn't be something that's played quite frequently outside of a World T20.
Exactly right.
So that's how I see this is happening. Like a bit like the soccer and the World Cup. You've got the World Cup is the pinnacle. Countries play together at that point in time, and you might have a few qualifiers along the way, but it's not something that's saturated the entire market. So I'd go ODIs make sense, Test cricket makes sense, T20 no, and then T10 definitely no as well.
Yeah, let's hope that T10 thing was a once off. I don't want to see this become a common trend. So yeah, that's some good news about the FTP. It will probably affect the way we watch cricket and probably the way we cover cricket. I guess one other news that's come out is about spot fixing. And we're not talking about India or Pakistan or Sri Lanka or any of these countries. We're talking about the Ashes. There's controversy around whether the Perth test was actually... there were accusations of spot fixing.
Yeah.
There's evidence behind this. It's just rumors right now.
An English newspaper maybe trying to get a bit of an edge in the Ashes. But no, yeah. Look, it is a serious point. And there is videos of allegations made of, because you claim they have, you know, sources in different groups who can help spot fix events. And so far, the ICC is investigating this. But for me, it just goes back to, you know, the ICC, once again, is taking a newspaper to go out there and look to expose this. And that, to me, is a failing of the ICC. And they're now moving to target other people, but it's always an action that's too late. The other interesting thing was, I think a few of the people who have been alleged to be involved are of Indian origin, including one of the bookmakers. But I think it's one of the guys who was involved in one of the age scams that was done in the Indian cricket team. Oh, so it's almost they faked their birth certificate to get to a certain under-19s level or things like that, and then they got expelled from cricket. So it's just interesting going. I think every single country, not just Australia, not just India and other countries, should be looking at who's at risk of moving down this path and what motivates them. And the betting industry being illegal, but the whole range of activity where someone who's been deprived of their entire income is at risk, so they should be looking at what do they do there. Australian cricket team, like, you think about the time period in the last 6 months where something like this could have been, players would be open to it, is when the whole contracting pass was happening, no one's getting paid. Yeah. And you go, that's prime time for a bookie to come in and offer someone $100,000 and go, hey, just ball or no ball. And people still associate that as not cheating as much compared to fixing the result of a game. So it's very, very important that the ICC in each home country looks at who's at risk, how do you deal with it, and deal with the root causes of it, as opposed to trying to just fly after and making sure things are clean.
Put a band-aid over it. I definitely agree. This headline definitely caught my eye, because we haven't really heard about match fixing at the international level for about a decade now. I mean, obviously there was the Hanze Cronier, Azharuddin, there was the Chris Cairns, but the actual incidents seem like they happened a long time ago, whether it was in the 90s or early 2000s. So for it to come back into the game now, I know it's just a rumor, it's a little bit disappointing. But as you were saying, they have to deal with the root cause and really try to sort of predict where these match fixing situations might occur before they happen, and then try to do things to prevent them.
Yeah. Well, the ICC do have an anti-corruption unit. So, you know, that's there. And we'll probably look into this. So hopefully that, you know, nothing is coming of Australian cricket, because that would just be pretty sad. It's sad anywhere. But yeah, let's hope that this is just a rumor and this stays that way and just goes away. Oh, as you said, PJ, it's good to have these non-Ashes related stories coming out at a time when England are struggling.
Let's be honest, like, irrespective of fixing, there's no way England will win. nothing could happen. Nothing could change.
Yeah, true. They couldn't
make them win.
They couldn't fix it enough for them to win. But yeah, I guess we can move on to the big story now, which we want to cover off the Safa's Tour, which is happening at the start of next year. It should have been starting already, but we can discuss that. So India are going to South Africa for a 3-test series. Originally it was 4-test series. Then they're playing some ODIs and probably a T20 as well after that. And so India, one piece of news that came out of this thing was that they're not going to play any practice games. They're just going to go in 2 days before, have a net session, just get straight into it. Haven't played overseas in a long time. Haven't faced Rabada or Steyn, who's coming back, or any high quality seamers on South African pitches in a long time. Let's just go in there and see how we go.
I'm really interested in your thoughts around the scheduling of this series. India haven't played overseas apart from the one series in Sri Lanka and West Indies for almost what it seemed like 2 years. And then this series against South Africa, which is the big challenge, which is the opportunity for India to really prove all the doubters wrong and say we are the best team in the world without doubt, home and away. And then they shortened it from four matches to two matches. What was the thinking behind that, in your opinion, Army?
Oh, I was not really happy about it. I know a lot of South African fans weren't happy about it either, because what happened was actually they had sort of expected the India-South Africa test series to kick off on the Boxing Day test, which, like here in the Ashes, in Australia, Boxing Day test is a big deal in South Africa. So unfortunately that didn't go through, so South Africa lost their big scheduled Boxing Day test match, and now they're rescheduled against, sorry to say, Zimbabwe, who are a up and coming team, but against South Africa it's not going to sell your tickets like India would. So that's disappointing. I'm quite disappointed at the fact that India going in with less preparation than is ideal. Normally you go in with at least a few test matches for practice against high quality teams, you have a few net sessions.
But it seems like, sorry to interrupt, but it seems like these are all choices of the Indian team.
I think there's two separations here. There's the BCCI and the Indian team. What the Indian team wants is very different to what has actually happened. Yeah, so Virat Kohli is actually very public in this. Both Dhoni have said that there needs to be proper planning in place for these sessions. And the new approach and the new kind of memorandum they've signed is, including new FTP, is Indian cricket team, for example, won't travel post the IPL. They'll have X amount of cricketing days. Yeah. They'll have proper tours. So that's coming into play down the track. Yeah. But the BCCI is made a massive error here where they basically just compromised the Indian cricket team's chances in South Africa for short term, and honestly, you know, making money in the Sri Lankan series.
Yep, exactly,
yep. And that's causing all these complications. So that's a big issue. And I think the Indian cricket team is very, very annoyed by this. So even this whole, that they wanted three practice games, and that was what they asked for, and yep. Ravi Shastri and every single person asked for, and they've ended up with now zero. I think that last one is probably due to probably is an Indian cricket team decision, and they've made an assessment going, we all know what happens in overseas tour matches. India does it, Australia does it, every country does it. They go substandard grade cricketers who play out there who don't give any practice. And what India's doing instead is having more comprehensive net sessions. I've heard talks they're going to send an extra four seamers from India to help out in net sessions and some of the up-and-coming pace bowlers as well. So they are looking to take this seriously, but they've been constrained by the BCCI. So I think if the Indian cricket team could plan this, they would have just axed the entire Sri Lankan series. Or maybe left it at a test-only series and therefore gone early to South Africa and prepared for it properly. And now it's going to be an interesting, challenging. But from a selection perspective, I go the Indian cricket team is probably one of... I'm pretty happy with the overall selection. They've made the right decision in terms of the batsmen. They're all the right batsmen there. Rohit Sharma is an extra batsman. Hardik Pandya, for me, is still the X-factor, the all-rounder there. And Ravi Jadeja, Ravi Ashwin are the two spinners to take to this tour. One of them will play. Not sure who yet. And the pace bowling attack, for me, is something I'm very, very impressed about, where I go, these seamers, adding Hardik Pandya to it, is basically players who can win this series for India.
Apart from the issue we talked about before with Bumrah, you know, I've been a big supporter of Bumrah. I think he's going to be an amazing test player if he gets the opportunity. I just don't understand picking him if you're going to not allow him to play Ranji games, because if he gets the opportunity to play, which is unlikely, he won't be in the best position
My gut feel is he's a net bowler.
There can always be injuries, though.
I think he's a net bowler. Like, that's my major feel for him. Bumrah and some of the other players coming in are all net bowlers.
The net bowlers will be the four pace when they brought in
when you're in a concentrated three-match series, they can't tie them out. And that's the idea behind bringing additional net bowlers to really give the batsmen practice.
But if you put guys in a squad, you're pretty much saying that if, you know, the pace bowlers in the squad either underperform in a couple of tests or they get injured, Bumrah's going to have to step up.
Yeah,
and all I'm saying, it's almost separate from this series, but if you're gonna, you know, put him in a squad where he might have to play, you got to play him in a dead rubber game against Sri Lanka. You got to play him in Ranji games. Like, how is he going to succeed?
Ranji, I completely, like, he should have played. And it's interesting, the BCCI have actually reversed their decision on a lot of their players, and Saha, Rahane, etc., all playing in the Ranji semi-finals now.
But to play Ishan Sharma in the third test against Sri Lanka, like, what are you trying to prove? The guy's been playing for like 15 years, you know, like, I don't understand what he's going to gain from that, or anyone's going to gain from that. I think the key selection issue for India would be, how many batsmen do they play in this series? Do they just play the five batsmen and then have Saha either at six, or do you put Pandya at six? Do you play Ashwin at six? Like, how many bowlers and batsmen do you put in the squad? What do you guys think about that?
So, like, I guess Virat Kohli's memo has been more aggressive cricket. He wants to go out and win series, win test matches. And I think he might go with that, but against a South African team, which is very strong in South Africa, I think the better decision would be to stray on the side of safe and actually play six batsmen. Because, as you said, like, you know, I'm a big supporter of Ashwin and his batting, but he's not been in the form that I wanted him to be before the test series, because he had a hard run against Sri Lanka as well. And Rohit Sharma has been in great form. So I would play that extra batsman in Rohit Sharma. It gives you more depth. They do have, you know, Ashwin can obviously still bat. If they play Jadeja or Ashwin, they can both still bat. Bhuvneshwar Kumar can hold the bat as well. So they do have some depth in there. But in terms of batting, in terms of selections, I'm pretty happy as well. Of course, it will be good to see how Pandya goes. He's an X factor. And if he can deliver with the ball and the bat, then that changes everything for India.
Yeah, and I'll kind of go with the batting lineup. For me, it's a... question of the pitch will come down to it. Like, if it's going to be a tough pitch to bat on, I'd play the extra batsman. And that's also designed by the fact that when you have a good pitch to bowl on, you don't need the extra bowler anyway, because it's going to be a concentrated game regardless. But if it's going to be one of those flat pitches that you get, which I don't expect in South Africa, then you would look at that five bowler theory. But my gut feel is, I do agree at the moment, do err on the side of safety. Yep. Bat deep, you've got... You look at that batting lineup with Bhuvi playing as well, likely to play, and Ravi Ashwin or Jadeja, whoever ends up playing. And I'm still not sold on Ashwin in South Africa. I think Jadeja's got a good record there.
Yeah, he's
suited. England's a different proposition. England, I'd go Ashwin 100% over Jadeja every single time. But you pick those players. They actually bat really deep at the moment. India probably bats down to 8 or 9.
So if we all agree that if it's going to be on a seam-friendly pitch, like we expect in South Africa, India should have the 6 batsmen and then Saha at 7, which 4 bowlers would you pick in the first test?
Okay, 4 bowlers. Well, I think probably, I mean, including Hardik Pandya's all-rounder, I'm guessing.
But that's a question. How does he fit into the squad?
I would probably try and fit in Hardik Pandya. Yeah, because he gives you that liberty. He gives you a batsman. I would probably play one spinner as well. So probably Ashwin or Jadeja, one of them. And then I probably have to only pick 2 bowlers, I guess, and rely on Hardik Pandya maybe.
As a third seamer? I think, yeah, that could be...
That could be,
Hardik only really fits in if you're dropping a batsman. Although I'd say his form right now, you'd go, surely you're doing it. He could do a good job.
I think that the key for India would be the development of Pandya as a genuine all-rounder. And he has the potential to do that, and he's shown flashes of it. But we still haven't seen it consistently in Test cricket. If he can prove himself as a legit number 6 batsman and as a legit all-rounder, and if India can replace Saha with a genuine batting wicketkeeper, and I know Saha is a great wicketkeeper, but if they can find a guy who is almost at that level of wicketkeeping, who's a genuine batsman, that will make India almost unstoppable, in my opinion. I'm not saying that as an exaggeration. I think India's in a good position now. They have a good squad. I think trying to fit Pandya into the squad is almost a good problem to have, because that shows how competitive the Indian team is right now. But if they can unlock that potential by bringing in a legit batsman, like someone like Dhoni, for example. I'm not saying that India's going to find another Dhoni, but somebody with that sort of potential with the wicketkeeping and the batting, that would allow them to play Pandya at 7 and put the wicketkeeper up at 6 with the confidence that India could bat through.
Well, I still think Saha's a bit undersold here, like underrated. Like, I do agree, he's not a genuine wicketkeeper batsman in the sense he doesn't average 45 or 50. He's not a de Kock standard. He's probably not a Bairstow standard. But he's on par with the other wicketkeepers around the world. So he's a very, very good wicketkeeper batsman. He's top 3 in the world. And he has shown the ability to have really gritty key knocks in Test cricket across the last year. So
not overseas, though. Yeah, he has a really bad overseas record.
He's only played games in West Indies, I think he did pretty well. And Australia, against Sri Lanka, did pretty well. So the one series that you're talking about 6 years ago is the game that you're referring to.
Well, again, when was the Australia series? About 2 years ago?
So that's the only series. I played like 2 games because Dhoni played the other few.
Yeah, that was a retirement. Okay.
So realistically, he's actually done a relatively good job based on what he's done. But I do agree, if you can solidify, right now for me, Saha's the best player and he'll be there for the next year or two. And the Indian team, he's been critical towards that. For the last, I think, India's won 9 test series in a row, which is unprecedented for not just, I think, Indian cricket, just in general. And they can continue down that momentum and Saha's important to it. But if we go back to the batting lineup, you go, for me, Vijay starts off at the top, and then it's a question of Dhawan or Lokesh. Who would you pick?
I'll pick Rahul. I don't think you can go wrong with these 3 guys. I'm actually a big supporter of Lokesh Rahul. He averages almost 50, I think, in Test cricket. And if you look at the history of Test cricket, there haven't been that many players who have averaged above 50 at the number 1 and number 2 spot. So we need to really put that in perspective. He started off his career really inconsistently, and after that, he's actually... shown that he can score quite a few 50s. It's not just boom or bust with him. I think the potential is for Rahul to be the best opener in the world if he can just stay healthy. So I would pick Rahul, but I'd be comfortable with Shikhar Dhawan as a backup player there. And as you were saying, I think Vijay deserves that number 1 spot right now, especially with his overseas record. He's probably the player that I probably have the most trust in going into the series.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It is a good problem to have because I think Dhawan's come a long way. In recent times, he's, even in this series recently, he's also been having some good knocks as well. In the test series that were against Sri Lanka. But I'll probably go with Lokesh as well. I guess it gives you a bit more. The thing is with South Africa and the under preparation, I'd rather go for a more safe approach just because, if that one comes in and, scores a quick 550, but the new ball is still fresh and then, we're exposed. We have players like Pujara and Kohli. As opposed to the new ball, I'd not prefer that. I'd rather have Vijay because he can definitely plant the new ball. And Lokesh can also do that to a better extent than I think that one
Chigadon
can.
Yeah, that's probably a fair comment. And you go, Pujara, he does have a question mark on his overseas record, despite the fact I think he has the capability to do it, and I expect him to prove his doubters wrong this series. But between Vijay and Pujara at 1 and 3, I'm actually relatively confident that India's middle order will be protected, because I think Kohli will do well at 4. And then you go, Rana, is he going to stay at 5? Is he your number 5 batsman at the moment?
I would put him at number 5 just because of his overseas record. He's a player that I have faith in, and I'd put Rohit Sharma at 6. But Rahane would stay at 5. If he doesn't perform in his series, then I would consider dropping him. We got players like Shreyas Iyer, who's been knocking on the door for years now. He has an amazing domestic record. He shows that he can perform at the international level with his one-day experience recently. So yeah, he's skating on thin ice, but I have faith that he'll step up.
Yeah, the expectations are pretty hard because he's had one bad series, basically running.
But if you compare his record to the other players, I know this is a very high standard. The Indian batsmen are excellent. Compare him to Pujara, compare him to Kohli, even compare him to some of his openers. His record is a little bit below them. So if the one player you need to say, you know, would have to be dropped if another player is brought up into that top 5, it would be him.
He's a vice captain, though, which is the interesting
thing. But Rohit Sharma has captaincy experience as well, so he could probably slide into that.
Oh, you go Pujara almost as vice captain. But no, you're right. Like, as in Rane, to me, he deserves to start the series off, but I wouldn't be opposed to Rohit Sharma coming in instead of it, depending on how the team structures itself. Because Pandya, for me, is someone I'd like to fit in, depending on the conditions. But then you go, okay, right, we're either going Rohit Sharma or Pandya, I guess, is the option there. Then you got Saha clearly after that. Ashwin or Jadeja?
I would go with Jadeja. If I'm not mistaken, he's still the number one bowler in the world.
Well, the one and two. But Jadeja does have a 5-4 in South Africa. He's got a good record in South Africa.
He played well in South Africa. I sort of question that series. I think the expectations were so low for the Indian team in that last series. But look, I don't want to take it away from Jadeja. He's performed consistently. You know, he hasn't really had that many opportunities to play in overseas tours, so I can't really speak too much to his overseas record. But really, his action and the way he bowls is much more suited to the Indian pitches. So, look, I would start off with Jadeja, but I wouldn't be surprised if Ashwin sneaks into that third test.
Yeah, look, Ashwin is considered the better bowler. I think he has more tricks, he's got more variation. I think he's more established as a bowler, even though Jadeja has a great record. Also, I think Ashwin's probably a more dependable batsman as well at this stage, although Jadeja has shown flashes over the last few years that he's also really good as well with the bat. It's a tough decision to make, and the role that they're going to be playing is very different to what they do in India. Whereas in India, Jadeja and Ashwin look to take the wickets. In this one, they're looking to support the seam bowlers who should be taking the wickets. So with that said, it could get very close. It's really a toss-up. I'll toss a coin and pick one of them, to be honest, because they're that close now. Yeah, but I guess after that, we'll be looking at the seamers, basically. With Asaha obviously being the keeper, because there's no other options keeper. So
I would go with Yadav, Shami, and Bhuvi.
Yeah,
I wouldn't put Pandya in there. I think Pandya, you know, he has to really see where he fits into the squad. India have to have the best paceman so they can bowl South Africa out twice, especially because of the lack of experience in overseas tours in the last couple of years. India really have to go in with their best attack and not just think, oh, Pandya might perform. Like, there has to be no doubt about who their best bowlers are and put their best bowlers forward. Because there's one thing about, you know, having two spinners in India and bowling a team out twice and then having to bowl a team out with three pacemen is a whole different challenge. So I wouldn't have any doubts. I'll put these three pacemen forward.
Yeah, I'd definitely agree with the three. I think Bhuvnesh Kumar might be actually, to be honest, the most important bowler that India's going to have, because he seems to, although his test opportunities are limited, whenever he gets them, he seems to perform really well. We all remember that England series where he was the most dominant bowler and arguably batsman.
That's right.
In that series. Obviously, you know, foreign conditions suit him more with his swing. He's a much better bowler than he was back then. He bowls faster. He gets more swing. He bowls with more of a plan, I think, now. He complements, you know, Yadav and Shami really well. So I think he might be the most important of the three. He can also add the top of the bat as well.
So, it's going to be very interesting to see how Shami and Yadav perform in this series. I think they've developed a lot over the last couple of years. They really struggled in the Australian Tour 2 years ago. They really struggled against New Zealand in New Zealand. But this was several years ago. I hope that in these conditions, they can really show the progress they've made. And they have the opportunity in a full three test to showcase their ability. If they don't perform or if they haven't shown that improvement, then India really need to start questioning, you know, what sort of pace ball they put forward. But this is probably the most important series in their career, I would say, because they've had that 2-year span playing at home. They've shown that progress, but now they have to really show it at the probably the most challenging conditions, but also the conditions that are going to give them the most opportunity to succeed.
Yeah, I think they'll do well. So I still think this Indian pace bowling attack is on par with some of the other bowling around the world. So the only ones, I think Australia's got a better bowling attack. I think India's bowling attack is far superior to England's, as a basic example. You had Jimmy Vanderson Broad, I'd rate the other players right now higher. Not throughout their history, of course. And even South African cricket team, Steyn's coming from injury. Morkel's, he's not the same player he was before. Rabada,
so you rate the Indian bowling pace attack above the South African attack?
I wouldn't say I rate them above them, but I think they can have the potential to be on par with them throughout this series.
My issue with that is that this is, again, more of a scheduling issue. I just haven't seen the Indian pace bowlers really, you know, spearhead the Indian attack and take 20 wickets in a test series. And you could say that, oh, they're playing on Indian pitches, but that's my whole point. Like, I don't doubt the potential for Shami and Yadav, but you can't expect these guys to just, you know, play Indian pitches.
Not even Indian pitches. You go to Australia series. Bubi took a 5-4 in to win a test match against Australia. You go back to the West Indies series, like Bubi did that. I mean, you're using these examples, right? But they've actually delivered and done that a lot of the time.
But that's like one-off. Look, India have generally won these series at home with their spinners. I mean, there's been Yadav's bowler every now and then. Bubi has got a bag of wickets every now and then. We can't doubt that having two spinners out of the four or five bowlers they have really spearheaded their attack. I don't think we can doubt that. This is going to be a whole different thing. We're not going to be able to have Jadeja and Ashwin take a bag full of wickets. It's going to be on them consistently, on their shoulders to win series. And until they have proven that in overseas conditions consistently, I can't really give that credit to them. I think they're good, the potential's there, and I think we're going to find out a lot about them over the next year or two with overseas series coming up.
Yeah,
what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, look, again, I'll go back to the preparation. It went from a 4-test series to a 3-test series. Then you add the fact that they're coming in with a 2-day practice net session. There's little time to get acclimatized. There's little time to get practice. And again, the pressure's on the seam bowlers who haven't played in a place like South Africa in a very long time. You know, playing in West Indies and playing in Sri Lanka is quite different to playing in South Africa or England or Australia or New Zealand. The conditions are quite different. I'm sure South Africa is going to prepare some green tracks. I'm sure they're going to be bowling a lot of bounces to the batsmen. You know, Rabada's one of the best seam bowlers in the world. Steyn, if he takes one game to warm up, then the next two he's back to Steyn, then we're screwed.
I'm not so sure about Steyn, actually. I think he's been hyped up a little bit too much recently. I don't think he's been as effective as the Steyn we've known recently.
Well, he's been injured for the last like two years.
That's the thing. But even when he played, I know this is dating a little bit back, but he played in the World Cup.
I think limited overs is very limited different. Limited overs. Test cricket is delivered. Yeah. I do agree with you. Limited overs, I don't think he's the best.
No, he's not. Even like T20, he struggles a lot.
He's not going to be in that squad.
He bowls fast and people can just use that to advantage. But test cricket, he bowls incredibly.
Yeah, and Rabada's the one to watch. He's a gun player. And even more cool, you go with his lift that he gets. But having said that, look, I still think India's seam bowling attack is very varied. Like, you look, Shami is someone who can be all-out attack. Yadav tends to bowl. He can bowl bouncer really effective. Bubi's a swing bowler.
Yeah.
And then you go Hardik Pandya, if he plays, is an effective third seamer. So it's in a good, solid position. And South Africa's batting. Like, we're talking about South Africa's batting. I'd go, look at their batting lineup. Abi de Villiers is back. They've got a new coach in. Faf is a gun player. Umla is on the decline but can perform. But the rest of the lineup, they've all got question marks on
them. De Kock has a great record against India.
But you look at their openers and probably their top three or four, there are big question marks on South Africa's team right now.
Yeah, I mean, if this series was in India, I would back India to win 3-0. This is a whole different condition. Indian players, again, have the potential. I just don't know if the scheduling and the selectors have put them in the right position to succeed. I think India will struggle in the first test, but they have a chance to really come back in the last two tests. So I'm very excited to see how these Indian, especially the bowlers, step up to this challenge.
Yeah, look, I think the South African batsmen, I think they're a bit over. I think they're better than you were saying, the PG. They're really, really good. Like, you know, on their day, any one of them can basically take a game away from India. And they've done it in the past. Umla's had a great record against India. De Kock, obviously, he's more a shorter play batsman. His test series.
He loves India.
But he destroys India by himself.
I don't know why, but
yeah, as you said, Faf is a good player. He plays well against any team around the world. And ABD, obviously, it doesn't matter who you are, what you're bowling, he can just destroy an attack in one session. You can take a game away. But yeah, aside from that, you know, like, they do have solid openers. Like, I think Elgar's had a career year last year. And they have a few other players who are not that bad. They can provide a lot of support. So they do have a solid team behind them. I don't think it's going to be, you know, this isn't like a South African team that's dealing with injuries. Even Costain is back, ABD is back, Amla and De Kock, and no one's facing any injury problems. It's a South African team that's almost at its strongest.
And to put it in perspective, South Africa haven't lost a series in South Africa against any team other than Australia in like 10 plus years. Like, yeah, we're looking at a record recently, and it's actually kind of amazing. And India haven't really won a series outside of India, apart from against West Indies or Sri Lanka in a long, long time. So I think this is the strongest India's team they've had in about a decade. Mm-hmm. 2007 was that last really great year they had touring overseas when they won in New Zealand. And that team could possibly...
And that team won a test in South Africa.
Exactly. And, you know... Sri Sundays. Yeah, speaking of match fixing.
The interesting one, I mean, he's been acquitted by the courts, right? So, but having said that,
I should have brought him back.
Like, it's just an interesting grey area where the BCSF kept him suspended and banned, but he has been acquitted by the courts. And it's just one of those scenarios where you go, I'm not sure what to look at, but yeah.
Yeah, we should have a segment for it. Yeah, he played well that series all the time ago. Yeah. Bring him back.
Yeah,
so that boy bought the colours for that. It was one of the best balls he's ever
had. So what are your predictions for this series?
I reckon South Africa are going to win 2-0.
Bro.
Me? Look, I think the first test is the one where India is most at risk. And so I'd go India to win 2-1. And the biggest issue India has, apart from acclimatization, is catching in the slips, where they've dropped so many catches and that's going to cause them complications. But from my perspective, I think this Indian cricket team has the potential to be the best in the world. And this series will demonstrate that. And India should win a test or two in the series.
I think South Africa will win 2-1. I think South Africa will win the first two tests, and then after that, India will come back in that third test, which will really show what I'm saying about the Indian players having the potential. They just haven't had that preparation and that experience overseas. I think the key player for India, as always, is Kohli. Yeah. If Kohli has one of those crazy good series like he had against Australia, the last tour of Australia, India have a shot to win this series, I think. He's in the... I wouldn't say the form of his life because he's always playing well, but he's playing incredibly well right now. And if he steps up, then India can do anything.
Yeah, for me, the key player, I'd actually go Vijay. Like, he's absolutely crucial to blunt out the new ball. And if Vijay falls early, Kohli, etc., will not be able to...
That's the difference. I think Vijay is important for India not to lose. I think Virat Kohli is important for them to win.
Yeah, that's fair.
I'll probably say, as I mentioned before, Bhuvneshwar Kumar, I think, from a bowling standpoint, if we're going to win the actual test match, it's going to come from taking 20 wickets in a match. And I think to do that, probably the best chances we have is probably Bhuvneshwar Kumar, because he bowls really well, he gets that swing and everything, so he can take power attacks. He's taken 5 wicket hauls recently, so he's in the form of his life in terms of test cricket and bowling. So there we have it. That is the Christmas special. We've had a great time here, listening to Cricket on the Hearth and covering cricket.
We're not exactly sure when our next episode is going to be, but we definitely stay in touch with us, send us through your feedback, and we'll be back soon, hopefully. There was no